Shavua Tov, Shavua Tov. Today's daf in Masechet Yevamot, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh, is daf Chavav, and we're holding right at the Halakha Mishnah. So we've been talking about various cases where we had a problem with people that were matir a woman, matir a woman in various ways. Be matir a woman by being a witness that her husband died. You could be matir a woman by being the one who is in charge of being mater and nedarim, and you end up being unfortunately unable to find her a petach, and therefore she had to get divorced from her husband. You could be mater woman because you brought a get, and you said that b'fanai nichtav b'fanai nichtam, and therefore was a good get in a place where that testimony was necessary. Whatever. So we said in the cases that we've been talking about until now that we need to worry in those cases about the way that it doesn't look very good if that person who was the catalyst for the woman's current ability to marry someone else, if he goes in and marries her, because that leads people to talk about it as if the reason that he engaged in being mater in whichever way, perhaps that played a role. He was really planning on taking this woman afterwards. So this was like the most far-fetched step that we had so far in considering the question of inappropriate marriages and what would happen if you went ahead and took them. Now, the Mishnah continues to say that if, in all the cases above, the person that we were saying should not marry that woman, if he was married to someone else at the time, and then they had a wife, but then that wife died, so now he wants to marry that woman, then it's mutarot binaseh lahem, because since they're married at that time, so we're therefore we're not really thinking that this guy is looking to get rid of his wife and to marry another wife. He's going to try to marry two wives. That was very rare. And therefore, that would be too far-fetched. It wouldn't be inappropriate because of causing all kinds of rumors, because nobody would really go that far. So there's also another issue that we have to consider. The case here, we're talking about all of these men, if they had wives at that time. How about all of these women? If they went ahead and they married somebody else, we talked about this case before, they were married to someone else after they ended up becoming mutarot. And afterwards, maybe they were married for 10 years, you know, and then their husband died, or their second husband, or maybe they got divorced from the second husband. Now they want to go and marry these people. The shliach that brought the get, or the chacham that wasn't mad to the neder, or the guy who was made that her husband died, her first husband that died, in all those cases, also, we're not chayish that 10 years later, we saw they married somebody else, so then that already canceled out people's desire to create rumors around these issues. And what else is interesting is that the women are allowed to marry relatives of these men, and we don't think that maybe this is a way that they made up to meet like this. You know, they don't want anybody knowing that they're meeting up. So then they make up, okay, so let this woman that I really want to continue having relations with or start having relations with, let her marry one of my kids, or let her marry my brother. And then, you know, I can always go visit my brother and get a chance to be alone with her and so on. We're not chayish that kind of thing, nor are we afraid that this is going to present too many temptations for this guy and that people will claim that he was tempted, and that's already ridiculous. All right, so now what the Mishnah does, however, imply is that by not talking about having gotten a divorce. In other words, if these women, it says if they died, what about if they got divorced? So then apparently their husbands who were instrumental in being matir this new woman, they can't marry that new woman. So let's say if a guy is married to a woman and he is made in Besdin that, let's give names. He's married to his own wife, Rachel. And then he happens to be a witness, he claims, to the death of Sally's husband. So that if now he divorces Rachel, he can't marry Sally because it looks suspicious. It says over here only if the woman they were married to, Rachel, died. So then he can go ahead and marry Sally. But that's mashmah, if they get divorced, that then we are going to suspect that the divorce was actually caused by his falling in love with Sally. and that really, therefore, it should be us for him, because now we're going to be chayshir. Okay, so maybe he only claimed that her husband died because he wanted to divorce his wife and marry Sally. So therefore, you see from here that indeed we would be chayish that. And we don't want people to say they divorced their wives in order to marry Sally. But there's a braita that says otherwise. The braita says, afilu nidgarshu. So, I mean, on the one hand, we're talking about a Mishnah that specifies death, which certainly, I mean, if even Gerishin were enough to allow them to marry, why would it talk about their wives dying? So how do you explain that? I mean, is this a machlokas, tanoim, or what? No, says the Gemara, there's really not a problem. The case that we're saying that he can marry this woman, even in the event that there was a divorce, that is talking about where there were problems in this marriage for years. So then we do not believe that this particular event in which he was Matir Sally's husband, that that was the reason that he divorced his wife, because the relationship hasn't been a good relationship for a long time. And whereas in this case, all of a sudden, you know, the marriage was a perfectly fine marriage until he met Sally and claimed that Sally's husband died and that he saw it. So then when all of a sudden there's a divorce, then we get suspicious. Why all of a sudden there's a divorce after he was Matir Sally? It's interesting that in the Rambam it's Mashmah exactly the opposite. If there were problems in the marriage, then he probably got turned on by Sally and figured, whew, at least I have an alternative, right? Hashenkin, if there were no problems in the marriage. So then, I mean, why would we think at that time, when we didn't see any kind of issues, why would we think at that time he was already on the lookout for somebody to take his wife's place? Okay, I mean, you could see both possibilities. The Ibayit Ema, or we could say, look, in both cases, it could be talking about that it's not a function of whether the marriage was good before or not. The issue is that who was the one that filed for divorce? I mean, using the modern tense in a sense, but, you know, in the times of the Gemara, we're talking about who was the one that started up. Who was the one all of a sudden that started complaining, I'm unhappy in my marriage? Was it her or was it him? So in the case where he starts up, so then people will say, oh, all of a sudden she's no good. Why not? Because he fell in love with Sally. And therefore, we can't trust his testimony. So it really looks bad. Masha Enke, the other case is Hadar Gilahi. She was the one who started up. So if that's the case, he didn't make the divorce happen. So why is somebody going to figure that this whole thing was like a plan to marry Sally? So therefore, we would be matir him to marry even the Chathila. Now, we also talked about the case in which if these women married somebody else and then they were widowed or divorced, that then it's not a problem. But wait just one little moment over here. One of the cases was that somebody was made that Kathy's husband died, right? And then she went ahead and she married another guy. And now you're telling me that if she was widowed, I mean, I'm assuming the case of widowed, the case of divorce applies to all of the aforesaid cases. Somebody was made that her husband died, somebody brought the get and said, v'nai nechtam, or somebody ossered her with a netter, and therefore she had to go and get divorced from her first husband. Well, let's take the case where the guy said that her husband died. So now you're telling me that if she married another guy, and now her second husband dies, that this person, the judge or the guy that had brought the idea, whatever, all of these cases, the second husband dies here in the case where it was the aedis for the death, you've got two deaths in a row from two husbands. It's starting to look a little suspicious. How many husbands have to die before we catch on that this woman ain't good for husbands? So this is really a machlokas. What defines, we have a name for this. Yeah, the name is Katlanit. So she is, in one sense, Katlanit is catastrophic. Then Katlanit, she's a murderer. And we'll see. There's discussions of where this whole issue comes from, that it could be he's simply allergic to her. as the Gemara says, they call that Mayan. I mean, some type of hormonal distractions here that are going to kill the guy. Or it could be a case just like of Mazel, you know. So in all of those cases, don't we need to worry about the sheet of Rebbe? Rebbe later on says that a woman who finishes off two husbands, nobody should go ahead and marry her because she seems to have a chazaka. But that's because Rebbe holds that two times is a chazaka. So now this seems to be a raya against that, because over here it says kulam shenisu, which is assuming kasaka taita, that, I mean, even the case of mita, she was widowed for the second husband, could be referring back to the original case of mita. The guy says, I saw her husband die. The case of gerushin could be going back to the case of gerushin. Now, listen, guys, this is a little bit of an issue, because who cares that the case of gerushin is going back on the case of gerushin? Well, Rashi understands that, therefore, the Gemara is saying that a two-time divorce is a bad kind of thing to get involved with, because a two-time divorce can show a tendency to being an unhappy with her marriage woman. And if you're like Rebbe, so then you've got, at least not on the level of Isser, but certainly on the level of good advice, that you would not be able to marry her. And the question whether that would be actually true on any level, I mean, the truth is the Rama brings this shita. Even though most Rishonim don't hold of it, and as Rav Shlomo Zalman explained, even if you bring this, it does not mean that it's an Isser Gomer. It's more of a Eitzah Tova. So like when the Gemara says that if you know that there's a problem of a particular genetic disease in a family. So Gemara says, let's say you know that someone, the woman is from a family of epileptics, and the husband knows that he's from a family of epileptics, then he shouldn't marry her. But all of those, and even which were makbid is bichlal to be makbid on genetic diseases, even if it's not running in both families. All of that is obviously, says Rav Shlomo Zalman, just an Eitzah Tova to be aware of genetic diseases. It's not telling you it's us or mamash. So then if that's the case, then that's true about this as well. It's only the case of the katlanit where we would say it's actually prohibited, because then it's dangerous and you have to watch out for danger. Okay, so again, the question, these words about gerushin, agerushin, are necessarily critical to the pshat, the way Rashi understands it. But certainly what the Mishnah is saying, if that were true, is that a woman who lost two husbands, her first husband, where this guy says, I saw him die, her second husband, where it says, nis'armala, and now we're going to let the guy who was the aide who saw the first husband die, he's going to be allowed to marry her. But didn't Rebbe say otherwise? Because this would mean that our Mishnah is not like Rebbe, because Rebbe holds all over that betrays him, they have a chazaka. And that even if this happens once, this is later on in this is later on in our Masechta, the Machlokas, which becomes a Machlokas all over Shas, about the meaning of chazaka between Rebbe and Reb Shimon ben Gamliel. So this means, Lechora, that the Mishnah holds that two times losing a husband is not enough to make her a katlanit. Says, well, not necessarily. I mean, just because it says widowed or divorced on the second marriage doesn't mean that the cases of widowed or divorce apply across the board, that every one of the above cases we would be mater widowed or divorced. It could be that the case where the guy had said that she was a widow and that he witnessed the death of the husband, that there you can't say widowed a second time, because even though that takes away the chashad, but it opens up this new problem of katlanit. So maybe it doesn't mean that. So maybe the misa of the widowed of the second marriage, which is misa, is going back on the gerushin case where somebody brought a get, and he said, b'fanei nechtam, and the gerushin case is going back on the second marriage was terminated by a get, and the first one was the one where the guy said, I saw him die. So, okay, in which case you have no raya here to our machlokas between Rebbe and Reb Shimon Gamliel. Let's get back to the other issue. The Mishnah said that these women are allowed to get married to the sons or the brothers of any of the three individuals that we spoke of before who were the catalyst of the heter. The chacham with the neder, the aid with the death, and the person, the shliach of the get, who said, fanai nechtam. Now, what I don't understand, says the Gemara, is why is it when it comes to this case, we say it's all okay, and we have a braita that says that if someone was not supposed to marry a woman because he was caught by rumors, and he's nit'an min ha'isha, so people are saying that he's been carrying on a relationship with a particular woman, and it says that he should not marry her mother, he should not marry her daughter, he should not marry her sister, because then, if he does that, he's going to turn this woman that he's been carrying on with maybe for years into an erva. So like he's got a plan. He'll marry the mother, which will then get the daughter to come visit her mommy, and that will give them lots of opportunities to get together without anybody suspecting them. Isn't it amazing how the Gemara's got everybody's plan in mind? Like, you think, I mean, okay, over here we're talking about, you know, these people are not exactly so comfortable with the ways of the world that they can work out. Like, I know exactly what we would do to make this happen. It's like amazing. Okay, so you might think the same thing should be true over here. You're saying that we don't want him to marry someone that will cause visitation, which will give him, he thinks, visitation rights, to this woman. Whereas actually the marriage to the other woman is going to make her an erva mamish and make the situation much worse. I mean, at least until now, they were just not married. I mean, now he's sleeping with an erva. And so how come over here we don't worry about that? How come over here we say it's not a problem for any of these women to marry the relatives of the people that were the catalyst to getting her away from her first husband? Why won't we say that he planned out to have his ability to go visit, and that will give him opportunities to take advantage of his visit? Says, well, listen, I mean, women always go visiting women, right? So, okay, so if he's married to mommy, obviously daughter is going to come. Men never go visiting. Their wives always schlepping them. You know, come on, how come you never go visit your good old uncle? Come on, I got no time for this. So, okay, so then he doesn't really think in terms of this giving him opportunities. So that's not so likely to happen. Or you could say there's another question over here. The question is whether the partner that we're talking about over here is going to be careful with the visit, you see. So let's talk about the case where he's been carrying on with a woman, now wants to marry the mother, and we're thinking, okay, can't do that because he might be planning on having the girl visit, right? The daughter visit, and then he'll sleep with the visit. But that's because women, in this case, the mother, his wife, who is the mother of this girl, they don't really care that much if their husbands are sleeping around, because it does not asser them. It doesn't affect them. So if this woman has got an open mind, you know, okay, so my husband needs a little extra activities. What do I care if he's got some other friends, you know? So she's not going to stop it. But in the other direction, where we're talking about a man who marries these people who's related to the person that we don't want coming into the house to sleep with his wife, he ain't going to let her sleep with his wife, because if his wife makes out with somebody else, so then she's going to become a surah to him. So men are much more sensitive to their wife sleeping around than a woman is sensitive to her husband sleeping around. And that would give us a reason to be more makbid on one case above the other case. So that would be a reason other than the question of who's got the visitation rights. So therefore, it would be a completely different situation. Ask the Gemara, but if that's the case, how come we didn't mention daddy? I mean, we're talking over here about these various relatives. In the cases of the women, we discussed that they should not be, he should not marry the mother, because then the daughter will be coming around to somebody. In this case, we say that she would be allowed to marry the son, and she would be allowed to marry the brother. How come we don't mention the father? It seems to mean that the father would not be allowed to. No, just the opposite. It's not even necessary to talk about the marrying the brother, because what the Mishnah is saying is, look, I don't need to tell you that she can marry the guy's father. Because, I mean, what are you thinking? That she's going to marry the father and then the child is going to take advantage of his father's wife? He's nervous about his father. People don't, you know, they're worried about their father. So over there, Buzz is Benemine. He has a sense of respect for his father, and he's not going to sit around coming to the house to visit and then sleep with the father's wife. But his son, where the father is not Buzz's from his son. You might have thought that maybe it's possible that he would sleep with her. Kamashmalan, that either way really does not make any sense. And so with that, we're marked only on the women, not on the cases of the man going to visit the man. Hadron aloch ketzad eshet achiv shelo haya ba'olamo. And I'm telling you, there's only one step between the Doc and Richie, and if Barnea gets out of the way, he's finished. Oh, my God. And now we've... Oh, no. He's still there. This is the Mishnah that we've spoken about so many times. And it's the Mishnah, remember, of the four brothers, two of whom marry two sisters. And then the two brothers that are married to the two sisters, they die, leaving two sisters that fall to the two brothers. Now, what's wrong with that? You would think, okay, each brother can go ahead and marry one of these sisters, right? Because he's not going to marry the other sister. You've got two brothers, they can handle it. Now, the Mishnah said they cannot. All they can do is chalitza, they can't do yibum. Now, remember that this Mishnah served as the classic case of achot zekukato. So what we said is that since the two of them fall to yibum at the same time, so each one is the sister of a semi-wife, because the zika is enough to be almost married, and therefore, the same way you couldn't take your wife's sister if she fell to you in yibum, so too, you can't take your Zika's sister. And since over here, the Zika applies to both brothers, neither brother is allowed to take that woman, right? So this was the classic Achot Zekukato Mishnah. Now, there was a lot of stuff that got involved in that, because what if you hold Ein Zika? How do you explain the Mishnah? Why can't you simply go ahead and have one brother do one and one brother do the other? They could both do yibum. Why chatzot v'lo mityabo? So what we said was, one possibility was Rebbe Meir, and that was that we are not going to do something that could lead to a bittul of the mitzvah of yibum. How could it lead to a bittul of the mitzvah of yibum? So let's say brother one goes ahead and takes one of these sisters. And he says to brother two of the surviving brothers, right? So he says to brother two, okay, now, you know, I'll take this one, you take the other one. What's the problem? If there's no Zika, there should not be a problem. And there is no problem, absolutely not. So then why can't we do it? Because imagine a case where brother one went ahead and did yibum, and the sister is waiting for brother two, who's supposed to do yibum for her next week. And then they'll both be happily remarried to the brothers, the appropriate brothers. And then, wouldn't you know it, he drops dead. So the third brother, who was meant to do the yibum of the remaining one, now dies. All right, so now who is going to take care of the second woman, the sister of the woman that he just did yibum to last week? Well, what's he supposed to do? Nothing. Because now she's Achot Ishto. Before she was only Achot Zekukato and Ein Zika. But now she's Achot Ishto Mamash, because she did Yibum. So now there won't be any Chalitza and there won't be any Yibum. And that means, what are we going to do? We're going to be Mevato, the mitzvah of Yibum. Therefore, the Shita of Rebbe Meir is that the mitzvah of Yibum, I believe that this is the pshat. I mean, I didn't see it anywhere. The Pashtas people learn that it simply means we don't do something that can lead to the bittul of the mitzvah. However, in all other cases, except for the Richie Dock case, the halacha is that we are never choshesh that somebody is going to die. The Richie Dock case is the case of the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur for whom we appoint the Sagan in case he becomes Tameh. And in case, his wife dies, right? So we say over there, but I thought we're not going to be chayish for that kind of thing. So the Gemara comes out saying that it's a good thing to have somebody nipping at your heels, right? So this guy, so why are we chayish for Misa? Okay, so we're going to have this other guy nipping at your heels, and that way you're going to do a better job on the things that you can do, like Tuma and so on. So, okay, so we put all that together. But why all of a sudden over here we're chayish for Misa? And we're going to see later on, it's even a question, what if there's more than two brothers? Would we be chayish for the Misa of two remaining brothers and say, also Vato Mitzvah Yabmin over there? So I want to suggest that maybe the pshat is like this, that the Mitzvah of Yibum and Chalitza, where we have this strange sense of, so what does the Torah want? Does the Torah want the Yibam? So just say to do it. I mean, so what is it? But there's a way out of Yibam. There's a Chalitza. So the point, it seems to me, is that the mitzvah is constructed such that you should have the maximum ability to be osek in this mitzvah. And therefore, when you had the two falling together, by going ahead and doing Yibum, you may not be maximizing the mitzvah, you might be minimizing the mitzvah. And therefore, since this is a mitzvah that has both maximum and minimum, in a case where you're trying to maximize it by doing Yibum, and you may end up being mevatel it completely, so the Torah is offering you the minimal mitzvah because that will allow you to do more of the mitzvah, because that way you'll be able to do chalitza for both of them. So therefore, Rebbe Meir says it doesn't make sense to do Yibum in a way that might ultimately prove to be the undoing of the mitzvah of Yibum entirely in a different situation. Fine. So since the other brother may die, and that would leave the woman without anyone to take care of her, then the best thing is make sure that you do the mitzvah completely with both of them by doing only chalitza. And if you do only chalitza, then even if the brother dies, you'll still be able to do chalitza on the second one, because this din of the achot zekukato is really only a derabanan. It doesn't take off the mitzvah of chalitza. Okay, but those were the two approaches. Now, we also had the additional complication that if you hold yesh zika, v'zika kichnusa, then if these brothers did not all die at once in a car accident, then the moment that the first one falls, she's already considered to be knusa. And then when the second one falls, there wouldn't be a problem of achot zekukato. But then that involved us in the question of, is that only where there's one option? That there's one brother that remained? Okay, so I'm just reminding you that this Mishnah served as like our big centerpiece in the discussion of Zika issues. And the simplest way of understanding the Mishnah is that the Mishnah is telling me, yesh, optimization is important because of the fact that the Torah provides the alternative, I'm suggesting. Normally, we're not giving alternatives. If I want you to do the mitzvah, do the mitzvah. One of the ways of understanding the alternative is not simply that it provides an opportunity for there to be a way out if a woman doesn't want to do it, and a way out if the man doesn't want to do it, but also provides an opportunity to ensure the kiyum of the mitzvah. That's the point, because that's another reason to provide an option. The option allows you to certainly be mekayim the mitzvah, and therefore, in a sense, chalitza is optimal. That's the beauty of it. So there are certain circumstances, not because otherwise it's very strange what the Torah is telling you. Well, this is what I want you to do, but if you don't want to do it, okay. So you just want to do. So this way it just seems so much nicer. They're saying, I want you to do it in the best possible way according to the circumstances. So you got this way to do it and that way to do it. That's what I'm suggesting. I never saw a svar like that anywhere, but it's interesting. Anyway, so getting back to our Mishnah. So taking into consideration the simple approach of the Yesh Zika, so we could say, you've got four brothers, Shnayim Mehem and Nesuot Shtei Achayot, and the ones who were married to the Achayot die, leaving both of them together to the other two brothers. You cannot do Yibum. You can only do Chalitza. And in fact, this was the Mishnah we asked just last week. Here it says, if you did go ahead and you did do Yibum, you're going to have to divorce your wife. Why? Because she was asura to you from the beginning as achot zekukato, And she remains Asura to you as a Hotsuku Katoga, what took off the Zika. In the other case where we had that the guy wasn't sure which sister he had married, there it was only a suffix, and we took away the suffix by having one of the other set of brothers do Chalitza. But here there's nothing to do. Therefore, even if you go ahead and get married, you do the Chalitza, you're going to have to get divorced. Rebbe Eliezer Omer, as Rebbe Eliezer says, well, now, wait a minute. According to Beit Shammai, you would actually be allowed to keep this woman if you went ahead and you married her. The question is, according to Beit Shammai, what the heck is the problem in the first place? Beit Shammai doesn't hold of these Isurim, as we're going to see, at all. I was going to ask, so what exactly are we saying that Beit Shammai holds? You could just stay engaged and marry to her. We'll see. So Rebbe Eliezer says it depends. According to Beit Shammai, you can be Mekayim, and according to Beit Hillel, is you have to get a divorce. Now, what about if one of these two sisters also was related? Maybe she was the mother-in-law of one of the other two brothers. Not a ridiculous case at all, right? So we had four brothers, and one of them ends up marrying, like, he's a much younger brother, and he goes ahead and he married the daughter of the wife of one of his older brothers. Okay. So now that would mean that the two sisters no longer fall to that brother, because the one of the sisters who is his mother-in-law obviously is the classic case of the Chamesh Esrei Nashim, in which they don't fall to Yibum at all. So then that means that brother who has an erva relationship to one of the sisters through another through his own marriage, he may be married to her, her mother, to her daughter, let's say, or to her mother, even be the same thing. So then he really doesn't have an achot zekuta, and therefore he is obviously usher to the erva, but by that same token, he's mutter to take the sister, who is no longer an achot zekuka, because the sister never fell to him in Yibum. But the second one is can't take either of them, because both of them are achot zekuka. Suppose one of them is usher because of a drabbanan, an iser mitzvah, or an iser kedusha. So over there, you certainly need chalitza, because it was only a drabbanan. So there you can't say you can go ahead and do Yibum, but you do, you not only may not do Yibum, but you do require chalitza. In that case, it's not real erva. Now, suppose one of them is usher, an iser erva, and the other one is usher on the other one with an iser erva. So each one married, let's say, the daughter of one of those sisters. So then there is no achot isha at all in this case. And then ha'asura lezeh muteret lezeh, and ha'asura lezeh muteret lezeh. And that is the source of that dictum that we spoke about when we talked about whether, remember, does Rebbe hold of all of these klolim, that this needs to apply to all 15 arayas. Zeh shamru achota kishi yivimta. And that was that big Rashi that was the first complicated case that we had to explain how every one of the 15 Arayas could end up being an erva to one and not to the other, and an erva to one and not to the other. So that was a little challenging to work out all of the curious cases, right? That was a simple case that we had, was they married the daughters. Okay. Now, that seems to mean that Yesh Zika. I mean, it's saying very clearly that these two sisters who fell to two brothers, and therefore there should be no iser and one brother marrying one and one brother marrying the other. The halacha is that these two sisters are related to both brothers as a semi-wife, and therefore yesh zika. Because if there's no zika in this sense, Rashi says the chumra of zika, so then michte, hani mitrei bati katin. These are two separate families. The only iser I know of is you're not allowed to take two wives from the same brother. Bayit echad hu boneh, beit achiv. Bayit echad hu boneh, ve'eino boneh shnei batim. Great, okay. But that's not the case over here. These are two separate brothers, nothing to do one with the other. Why can't he be boneh them? I don't understand. So each one comes from a different bayit. Hayli abeim chada. So they're sisters. Obviously, he can't take both of them, but one brother could take one sister, and one brother could take the other sister. So why do they need chalitza and not yibum if you don't hold of Zika? The only thing that made the relationship was Zika. Says the Gemara, but remember, we had an alternative. Li'olamei melacha ein zika. And the reason that the Tana over here says you can't do this is because he holds osilavato mitzvat yabin. We don't want you to do a yibum that may end up leaving another woman without the ability to be mekayim, either yibum or chalitza. Why? How would that happen? Because if brother one, it doesn't matter which one, but brother A, whichever that is miyabim one of these women, then the other one, brother B, might die. And then the sister is left without anyone to do anything for her because she's a complete eshet achi, achot isha, and there's no din of anything, not yibum and not chalitza. And therefore he will be mevatel mitzvahs yabmin. So in order to make sure that that's not done, we say both of them should do chalitza, says the Gemara. But then why does it say four brothers? I mean, wouldn't it be exactly the same if there were three brothers? Why are we making the case more complicated than it needs to be? So if the issue over here is in fact the osur levato, whatever, I mean, you could have exactly on this the same case. I mean, if you're telling me it's because of Zika, I understand. Tell me because there's Zika. So then there's a big advantage in saying there's four brothers. Because I might have thought, look, if there's only one brother left, then of course there's Zika, because the Zika points exactly to that third brother. Hey, buddy, you're the only surviving brother, and you got two sisters to be miyabim, and therefore you can't do it, because whichever one you're going to take, you're going to be pogeba akotsku katso. But how about a Zika that is spread out among two surviving brothers? So over there, if I would have said that, I would have said, okay, fine. You know, maybe if it's spread out among two brothers, so then it's not so strong, the Zika, because it's not forcing any particular brother to be related to both of these sisters. So then that means the natural assumption is let one take one and let the other one take the other. But if you're going to tell me that we've got the problem that it's osur levatel mitzvahs yabmin, so then what's the advantage of three brothers or four brothers? I mean, it's exactly the same, no? Because it's the same problem, being mevatel mitzvahs yabmin. So this way, if you're able to give chalitza to both, so then that's what you should do, and not give yibum and then not be able to do anything to the other one. No? Yes, of course. But don't you understand that if I would have said that, I'm trying to tell you a better case. I'm trying to tell you like this. Lo mi boy karminan. I don't even need to tell you three. If I tell you three, you figure out yourself. Okay. He should not do yibum, because the moment he does yibum, he is ipso facto creating a situation where the other sister cannot be handled at all. No yibum, no chalitza. That I understand. But for two brothers, I should throw in this business. Well, you never know. What if your brother dies? What are you, crazy? Why would my brother die? Well, your other two brothers died. Yeah, they were 40 years older than this brother. Anyway, I mean, so what kind of craziness is that, you would say? Therefore, we want to tell you, even in that case, we're going to tell you maybe your brother will die. So, lo mi boy tlata. We're over there. You're vadai bing mevato mitzvahs yabmin. If you do anything, you have killed it. So, that I understand. But I would have thought maybe if there's four, what are we going to worry about the other brother dying before he gets a chance to do yibum kamash malan? That even then, we're going to be cheshish. Maybe that's the pshat. But I don't understand, says the Gemara. So then, if you're going to be choshish for death, so then why not even say five brothers? Because, I mean, you know, why be choshish for one brother's death? Why not be choshish for two brothers' deaths? You know? Isn't it the same idea? No, because we're not worried about two brothers dying. That's already just very, very unlikely. So once it becomes unlikely, we don't think that is going to be what the Mishnah would be saying. Gentlemen, this is why I believe that my approach to the sugya is correct, because otherwise the Gemara's Havamina is ridiculous. What do you mean, say five? The fact that I don't say five is because I'm not chayish for the Misa of two. Why would you start with the opposite assumption? But if you're learning that the assumption comes from the very structure of the Mitzvah of Yibum, and that the Torah is saying, if there's a chance you're going to be mevatel b'yibum, don't do yibum, do chalitza, why would there be a difference between the possibility of one brother dying or two brother dying? So that you would have to come up with a svara of saying that since that is not something that's likely, it cannot be the reason that the Torah gives us the chalitza option. That's the point. But then at least I understand why we would ask such a ridiculous question. Otherwise, you look at the person like, what do you mean, say five? I mean, there's obvious reason why I won't say five. Anyway, Amar Rav Bar Avuna Amar Rav, in a case, we've got three sisters. And these three sisters are married to three brothers. Now, three sisters fall to surviving two brothers, right? So let's imagine these three sisters die. We'll assume initially there's a car crash. We're going to see whether that's the possible case or not. But three of the brothers are killed, and these three sisters fall in front of two sisters. What happens then? Now, this Gemara is about to introduce two new ideas. One idea is called Chalitza Geru'ah. A Chalitza Geru'ah focuses on the well-known halacha that we have that is based on Lo Chafatzti Lekachta. The Yavam is supposed to say to the court, I don't want her. But that meant that you could have had her if you did want her. Remember the diak we made before? So from there, the Gemara said, only if he had an option, lekachta. But if he doesn't have an option, lekachta, it means that there's no din of yibum, of chalitza, because where there's no yibum, there's no chalitza. Now that's true, dear Isa, okay? When the Rabbanan came along and created these extensions that prohibit yibum midrabbanan, such as this idea of Achotsku Kato, let's say, they obviously can't create a new idea that will be Mavatal, the Isser of Yavam Alashuk. You're going to still need to do Chalitza, which is why in this Mishnah, where we have Achotsku Kato, you're still going to need to do Chalitza. Why don't we say, if I can't be Miyabimer, then how can I be Chalitzer? And we'll turn around to you and we'll say, yes, but in this case, theoretically, she could have been taken. It's only because of this new concept of achot chalutzato, of achot zikukato. So because of that, don't do yibum. But still, you're going to have to do chalitza to deal with the problem of the yavam l'shuk, right? Now, the problem is, once we say that, then the chalitza that we're talking about is an abnormal chalitza. Because normally, chalitza stands for the option of canceling the yibum, because the yibum was possible. But where the yibum wasn't possible, then the chalitza doesn't really cancel the yibum completely. And if you consider the words of the chalitza, you'll understand this better. The Yavama comes along and says, and we all say after that, and the Kukach Yasel Ish Asher Lo Yivna Et Beit Achiv. Now, we're going to do Chalitza. Can we really say that? Thus shall be done to the man who refuses to build his brother's home. I mean, he's not refusing to build his brother's home. He doesn't really have an option. So now the question is whether the normal Chalitza, which affects his brother's home. Why do I say it breaks his, it affects the brother's home? Let's imagine that this brother had five wives. When this other surviving brother does one chalitza, that's it for all those wives. And they can now go and get married to anyone they want. And it is now usher for him to marry any of them. And he just canceled the entire Beit Achiv, right? Without one act, he canceled the entire Beit Achiv. Now I ask you, in the event that the chalitza is a poor quality chalitza because he didn't have the option of being miyabim, the woman that he gives the chalitza to, would we say that that chalitza addresses the entire bias of his brother? Maybe not. In other words, if a chalitza is a compromised chalitza, then it does not have the effect of canceling the entire bias from chalitza. Now, from there comes one of the curious implications of chalitza geruah, which is that the way to look at the chalitza geruah would be to say that the most it can achieve is taking off the zika on you. And you are going to give chalitza to remove that. But it does not remove the zika from Beit Achiv, because you didn't have the option with this woman to build Beit Achiv. So that creates a very strange situation. In this case, let's imagine what happens. In this case, we've got these three sisters. So two of them are going to fall to the first two brothers, right? So each one of those brothers can do chalitza to one of these two women, and therefore these two brothers' houses have been addressed through chalitza. How about the third sister? The third sister fell from another brother. Can one of these two surviving brothers do chalitza to her? Here we've got a new problem. And the new problem is that even if you don't hold that there's a concept of achot zekukato, and you understand that the Mishnah is based on osur levato mitzvat yamin, everybody agrees that there is a concept of achot chalutzato. Because once you gave chalitza to a woman, then in people's minds, you were married to her and you gave her a get, so to speak. Except that since she was a yavama, the get consisted of chalitza. So in that case, for sure, you cannot marry her sister. Now, over here, both of these brothers are faced, because of the fact that there were three sisters and each one of these brothers did chalitza, they are faced with an undeniable problem of achot chalutzato, because they already gave chalitza to the sister. But then that means that if they do the chalitza to the third sister, each one of them is doing a chalitza geruah. And if you do a chalitza geruah, you could only be removing the zika to you and not the entire zika. And therefore, your other brother needs to remove the zika from him. And only that way have you addressed the problem of the third sister. So therefore, in this case, both brothers are going to have to get chalitza, do chalitza, to the third sister because it's a chalitza geruah. Remarkable. So this is introduced by Rav, brand new halacha, and Sholosh Achayot Yevamot Shenaflu Lifnei Shnei Achim Yevamim. Since there's only two brothers, one brother does, let's call the first brother Reuven. He goes ahead and he does Leah's, the first wife's, the first one's chalitza. Shimon does Rachel's. And now Sally, who is the third sister, she needs to get chalitza both from Reuven and from Shimon. Omele Rabba. Okay, let me understand what's going on over here. If you're telling me that the middle one needs chalitza from both of them, okay, so then it's clear to me that you do believe that there was zika, and that for that reason, the zika has got to be removed from every one of the brothers. Because if you don't hold of zika and you just look at chalitza as a mitzvah, who the heck cares who did the mitzvah of chalitza? What do you mean you need chalitza from everyone? You need chalitza from everyone only because there was a zika to everyone. But if you don't hold of zika, so then whoever does chalitza removes the problem. Why would there be an issue over here? And since yesh zika, and this is a compromised chalitza, we'll call it a chalitza psula, chalitza grua, what's he refer to in a different, but the point is, it is a compromised chalitza, because there would be no way for me to marry her even if I want to. And therefore, what Rav is saying is that chalitza psula tzorich lachzor al kol ha'achim. If the chalitza is compromised, all of the surviving brothers need to do the chalitza to remove the zika from themselves. That's why you're saying that the middle sister, middle doesn't mean middle literally, it means the third sister. The third sister needs to get chalitza from every single brother. But if that's the case, and therefore you hold of yesh zika, so then all of these girls need to get a chalitza from all of the brothers. Because they're all yesh zika problems, you hold yesh zika, and therefore they're all poor quality chalitza problems, because you couldn't have taken her even if you wanted her, and therefore you're stuck with a chalitza compromise, the chalitza psula, for all three, and therefore two brothers need to do chalitza for all three. Says Rabba Baravuna, Rav is absolutely correct, you didn't understand the case. You assumed that we're talking about a case where there was a car crash and all of them fell to Chalitza simultaneously. And if that were the case, you'd be absolutely correct. Each one of these women needs Chalitza from both brothers. But what we're talking about over here is that they did not all fall to Yivam. What happens is one brother died, and then one brother does Chalitza. Now the next brother dies. The other brother does Chalitza. So again, using our names, before Reuven takes brother one's wife, does Chalitza. Then brother two dies. Her name was Leah. She was the first wife. Rachel is the second wife. Brother two dies, leaving Rachel. And now Shimon takes the responsibility for giving Chalitza to Rachel. Now brother three dies, leaving Sally. Who's going to take care of Sally? What's the problem? The problem is that Sally is the achot chalutzato of both Reuven and Shimon. So neither of them is able to give a real chalitza to Sally. So therefore, Sally requires two chalitzas. That's what happened. So then first, the first one falls, Reuven does chalitza. Nafla idak, Shimon does chalitza. Finally, when Sally falls, then what's going to happen? If he's going to chalatz lahai, so then he's going to take off the zika to himself. Chalatz lahai, the second brother, he's going to take away chalitza for himself. But since neither of them is able to do Yibam, so each chalitza only removes the zika to that particular brother. But there's a little bit of a problem. Because before in the first parak, we said that Ravuna, Gufa said that Rav holds that if a Yavama dies before he does chalitza, he is allowed to marry her mother, which means that he doesn't hold of zika. Because if you hold of Zika, he's never allowed to marry the mother, because the mother is the mother of his Zikuka. That was the whole discussion that we had before. So how does Rav all of a sudden come around and say the opposite? if Gufa was Ravuna, said that Rav doesn't hold of Zika. Okay, fine. Rav was saying this. If you hold of Zika, then the halakha would be that you would have to have the middle one going ahead and getting both chalitzas. But if you don't hold, I told you can marry the mother, which means there's no zika in the sense of zika creating that chumrah. And therefore, even a chalitza that is second-rate chalitza is going to be matir the yavama. Shmuel says, echad chalitza kulam. Nonsense. Any one of these brothers can do chalitza on all three of these sisters. That's what he seems to be saying. Says the Gemara, wait a minute. We know that Shmuel believes that there's a concept of a deficient chalitza. He holds, and I'll prove it to you. Okay, I'm going to prove it to you. So if he holds that a compromised chalitza is not enough to be matir, how do you explain the fact that one brother can? That makes no sense at all. Take a look what Shmuel said in a similar case. There was a case, there's three brothers, and this case, two are married to two sisters. The complication in this case is that each one has a wife besides. So we didn't discuss that. Now we're introducing Tzora into the case. Each of these three brothers has one of the three sisters. And besides that, they have unrelated wives. So each one, there's another three unrelated women that are falling to Yibam. So a total of six women are falling over here to Yibam. Three of whom are sisters, and three of whom are Tzoros to these sisters. Okay. So in that case, what's the halacha? So then the halacha goes like this. If the Yavam goes ahead and does chalitza with the sisters, then the tzarot are not going to be mutarot. Why? Because if he does the chalitza to the sisters, he's doing a second-rate compromised chalitza, because he cannot marry these sisters, because they're all basically achot chalutzatos. All three sisters. So therefore, it's clear that Shmuel holds that there is a problem of a chalitza gerua. And this is compromise. So once he holds that, how do you explain the case of the three sisters that we just talked about, that they fell before two surviving brothers? We talked about them as Sally together with Leah, and together with Rachel, and they're falling to Reuven and Shimon. I just want to make it clear that Sally is Jewish. Actually, her parents gave her a beautiful name based on Hashem Sal'i Umitsudasi, and therefore they wanted to remind us of Sally. So anyway, so now this is, according to Shmuel, so we say over here that we each one got chalitza after the other one, became a Yavama after the other one got chalitza, right? So hecha the kaima chalitza to Shimon chalitza kasher. So consider what happened. Reuven and Shimon did chalitza, every one of them in order, and each one of them was a full class chalitza, because they could have done Yibam, because it was talking about that they died one after the other. So what happens over there is that when the second sister falls to Reuven and Shimon, this is after Reuven did chalitza, so that chalitza could have been done really as a Yibam. That's a perfect chalitza. So now you're telling me that Reuven could come along and give her a chalitza psula? Shmuel, you're telling me that Shimon doesn't have to do the chalitza. Reuven should do the chalitza. What do you mean Reuven should do the chalitza? Reuven is married now to the sister. So how can he do the chalitza to this woman if Shimon is around who can do everything? So he can do a real chalitza. That's outrageous. If you yourself said that you need to do a chalitza that is not a chalitza grua, Shmuel, it doesn't make any sense. How could it possibly be a case where one brother should do everything? No, yeah, you're right, 100%. Shmuel never meant that one brother can do chalitza for all of them. He meant one brother can do chalitza for Sally. So in other words, what he's saying is, look, I agree that there is definitely a concept of a chalitza gerua, but I don't agree that if there is chalitza gerua, that that means that every single brother has to do the chalitza. That was Rav's opinion. I agree that if there's an option of giving a full chalitza, like Shimon over here, that of course you have to give the full chalitza, not the compromise chalitza. Because after all, the Torah said that kol misha eila leyibam eila lechalitza. So then even when we create a problem to Rabbanu, we're not going to undo that. So do the right chalitza. But where do you come off with this new idea that once we have a chalitza gerua, then the chalitza gerua is only going to take off your zika, and it's not going to really be able to affect the other members? That I don't agree with. I don't see why that has to be part of the understanding of chalitza gerua. So that's all I meant. I meant Sally. Well, if you meant Sally, why did you say all of them? How many Sallys are there? Hakulam ka'amar. Why did Shmuel say one does all of them? One doesn't do all of them. One does all of them in a sense that since you've only got two brothers and Sally is the third sister, and one of those two brothers, that's what I'm saying, one of those two brothers is going to be doing all of them, meaning the two out of the three. And it's not a problem. You don't need both brothers doing the third. That's all that I'm saying. That's what I mean by kulam, meaning most of them. That's the pshat. So kivan deruba gabe, whichever one chooses to do Sally, that's called kulam. Maybe that's true. And maybe there's another explanation. But the other explanation we will learn tomorrow, because not because it's so difficult to give that now, but that will give us an opportunity to review these ideas tomorrow and then see how we can expand on them. So tonight we learned two very new important concepts. We learned the concept of achot chalutzato that we never had before, and we learned the concept of a compromised chalitza. And we found that it's possible that there's a machlokas Rav and Shmuel about what the din is of a compromised chalitza, vis-a-vis being matir, all needing all of the brothers, or even one of the brothers. We'll look more into that tomorrow, Bezrat Hashem. Meanwhile, wishing you all, Yinei El Yeshuasi, Eftach V'lo Efchad, and may we hear only Besuras Tevas and wonderful things in time for this Chodesh Nisan. Remember, no more Tachanun for a while, so that's a good sign, I hope. Go to everyone. Shavua Tov.